Extraction number 11106, Mr. T. Wilson, reel 4.
Mr. T. Wilson, reel 4. What ceremonies or parades did you have whilst you were in the depot, Mr. Wilson?
Well, see, we joined up in June. 6 months training. We caught the armistice of November 11th. And then you're doing special drill, what you're going to do, lining up and things like that. And the regimental colours was there. And some had to be chosen to escort the regimental colours. And look, I was one of them, which was termed as an honour, really. Yes. And you'd march down the depot, and then the march past the stands up, then there was the civil reception and things like that. And it was quite good, and was more or less an opening to ceremonial, really. Enlighten you what to expect of you later on in training. Because you never walked outside with your rifle and being at any time, you know, as regard that, you were inside the enclosed area of the training. But when you got fully dressed, with your best suit on, because you had two suits, and you were well inspected by him, as you were, and all the civil people was there. And they'd done the normal armistice parade, the bugles and things like that. It was quite good. But let you know what was in store for you later on in your training. That was a baptism, really, I call that.
Passing out, how did that occur?
Well, Captain Gorson or somebody, I think it was Gorson, Captain Gorson, the captain, and then second in command, then the adjutant. They were on parade with you, and then you had your normal sergeant, your corporal and your lance corporal taking you, and they would observe you, and you went through all the paces what was required to do, because you're on forming formation on the left, on the right, marching in fours, then in file, and then single file, all the things what would come onto you. Then you do your guard duties and things like that. The inspection was the worst part of it because, well, really, the officer, when they never checked you, really. Not any passing out. No. Well, there was no need to because everybody was up to standard. Because we'll be tired if you want it. So therefore, you got that training and a little feeling. Later on, if you're not up to standard, it's not worth it. So make sure they can make that effort.
And there was a big final parade when you passed out, was there?
Oh, yes.
With the band?
No band, no. Just the commander in chief of the depot and his adjutant and things like that. Just in, and he passed you out.
What day did you pass out?
Well, that's it. Roughly about 6 months after. You do normally an average of 6 months training, really.
So this would be December?
Just about the December.
And then where did you go?
Down to Catrick.
And how were you received there?
Well, you allocated different ones. You earmarked for different companies. You didn't all get together again. There was 8 of us went to machine gun company, and then so many in A company, B company, C company. We didn't go in the HQ company because that was the administration company, you know, the battalion. That's why your pioneers, cooks and company clerks and all that is in. You went to the A, B, C and D company. And it happened to No, the D company was a machine gun company. Your report got you there. you know, you're a bit above the average for to get into the gunners, what they call the gunners, machine gunners. And there's about eight of us stuck in, got stuck into that.
What was the accommodation like at Cuttrick after leaving Fenham?
Well, Fenham was big buildings, was quite good, but down at Cuttrick, was just old wartime huts, really. Because Cuttrick wasn't a big place then. They got that, there was wooden huts, that's what they were down at Cuttrick. No, the accommodation was better at the depot.
And how many people to a hut?
There'd be about 20. Or a platoon or something like that. You know, if it was one platoon or one section and things like that. Because everything was done in fours. It was four sections and four platoons made a company. Everything was done in fours, more or less. It was four sections. Four sections made a platoon and four platoons made a company.
Do you remember the name or number of your section and platoon?
Well, really, can I get that far down? I was, the chap in charge, yeah, but there was number one, two, three, or four it was. But you stuck with that section all the time.
Who was in charge?
Well, you had a land sergeant or a sergeant, a corporal, and a lance corporal in charge of every platoon.
Do you recall the names of yours?
Well, a chap called Flanagan, who ended up quartermaster, but he's dead now. He went to Australia, he died, Flanagan, George Flanagan, he was a land sergeant then. And a chap called Birch, he'll be dead now. And the land corporal, can't remember the land corporal name now, really. But the land sergeant lived in the bunk, in the barrack room with you. And everything was the same there. Your bed had to be made up clean and swept and things like that before anything yourself. Because the ablutions, the washouts were there. And the water was nice and cold regular. There was no such thing as hot water to get washed in. Unless it was in the bathhouse. That's the only time you're going to need any hot water. When you go in the bath. But you never got any hot water for the normal shaving and things like that. Oh, no.
And you say these were huts rather than brick buildings?
Yes, they were huts at Cuttrick.
So life would be a little bit rougher there, would it?
Yes, it was.
What training were you doing? You said you were with this D company, which was the machine gun company. Uh-huh. What guns did you have?
Well, you had your normal rifle, which you always had. That was for your ceremonial prayers and use as well. And then you got taught it was a machine gun, a bigger 303. And then, well, there's about 365 parts in the machine gun, a bigger 303. But it's interesting. You could do a lot of training, even just to be a gunner.
What kind of training were you doing to do this?
More or less, sitting down on a form. You'd be outside, sitting on a form, and then you'd have a machine gun. It would be explained to you, stripping and assembling and things like that, which you learned in different times. Now, when you completed the stripping and assembling and the use of it, you go on the firing range. But that was maybe 12 months after. You went on a fire range straight, maybe 12 months after, and you've been with that thing day out and day out every day, by Saturday. You didn't do much training on a Saturday. And well, there wasn't mechanized then, what they call the limbers, horses. They had horses and a limber, what they, I think a lumber, a limber trucks they call them. And you used to pat them up, but. Yeah, daily training with that machine gun, you had to take part of, there would be number one and number two, they were behind the gun, number one behind the gun, number two was helping to feed it, number three would be seeing ammunition, and number four would ensure that number three would keep an ammunition. Then he used to say, fall out one, and then number two had to take his place, and that went on regular clockwork until you got used to doing the duties of a full machine gun, because only 4 years in the machine gun, really, on one gun, 4 years.
So you all had to be able to do your own, the other person's job?
Oh, yes, for anything, because that was it used to sicken you at times. You just get used, because I remember when we did some firing once, it just come onto the part where the chap in charge of the shoot was going to say fire, and he says fall out one, and I was number two, so I had to do number one. And the incident was really, we're flying below the crest. Well, you've got to check before you fire for crest clearance. Well, it just come on that part for me, and I didn't check for crest clearance. And they were one burst of 50 at the time, and they just skimmed the grass over the top. Otherwise, but see, I always remember that, because he says, follow one, you know, see? That's why when you have to do everybody's duty.
So firing to clear the crest, was that the skyline?
No, see, when you're in down in a dip, mm-hmm. you're going to elevate it, and you're upside down for the different movements you get and things. You've got the elevation or depression you've got to put on the gun. It's all given to you what to do. Then your last thing is what you call, if it's indirect fire, clear the crest, see? Well, you're on your side, and don't say that. You are clearing the crest. Well, it happened on me on that particular moment, and it was a demonstration shoot. No. Look, I was lucky. That's how I always remembered. And just say clear, otherwise I would just be hitting the crest.
So you had one machine gun. How many machine guns were there in the company?
Well, as I say, each section had one gun. And there was four sections in the platoon. So you'd have four machine guns in that one platoon. And then you'd have four platoons in the company. So you're roughly about 16, really. Because everything was only fours, more or less.
How were they transported? Were they quite heavy guns?
No, they weren't quite heavy. Number one got the tripod, number two got the battle, and then the other one got the ammunition. But it wasn't really. It was interesting, though, for the stripping and assembling, to see how it would fire and things like that. As I said, there's about 365 parts in it, and everything had to go down. And when you taught stripping, you took one part off and went there. The next part off you took there. And then when you start assembling, you reverse back on that line. So that means it come to you, it's having a muddle of things to try and sort them out. You taught assembling stripping over quite a lot, many days. So you got, like everything else, you had everything up by heart.
And how long would it take you to strip and assemble a gun? Oh. When you're really proficient at it?
No, that time, another thing over time, that is. I couldn't really say about the time, but there'd be no mistakes, because there were mistakes, sometimes, when you got used to it, there's no getting away from it. But the other method, the word that taught you, that you corrected it always. Remember, this took you 2 years, really. 2 years before you recognized I was a machine gunner. 2 years, not wanting one thing, deal. Then you're doing your normal rifle drills and things like that and firing.
And when you qualified, in a sense, over your 2 years, did you get some kind of recompense or badges or something to show?
Yes, you got, well, if you when you've done your annual shoot, you do once a year, about once a year, after certain training being done, used to go on the ranges. Well, I think when we were down at Blackdown, we went on the Bidley ranges. Well, there's about 100 targets in line on the Bidley range. It's quite a big, large range, Bidley. And you showed the plate about 18 inches square. Then after you get the plates, white plates, they are whitewashed. After you get metal plates, if you get them knocked down, your target appears. But your target doesn't appear. You knock them about 6 plates down, see? And then you get scored, how many shots you get, what ammunition you've got left at your target. Oh, it's quite interesting, really. And you got, if you qualify, you got a MG, what called machine gunner. The same as a rifle. If you got a certain score in your rifle shoot, you got what they call cross guns. Not just with the achievement, the badges on your arm, them the two most badges you got. The chaps in another company, you know, they had the loose guns. They were doing loose guns and not the normal rifle. Well, we were machine guns and machine guns.
Did you say what machine gun it was?
Vickers CO3.
And did it have any peculiarities or any peculiar faults that you had to look for?
Well, in terms of stoppages, it did stop. The machine gun did stop if the belt's not loaded correctly, or there might be a separated casing, or different things like that. But you knew you stopped the stoppages off by heart. The matter of fact, you used to do them blindfolded on the flapless ones, because it wasn't the original, what you're training with wasn't with the original gun, but it wasn't a firing one. It was shipping the same and thing like that, but it wasn't the reason why you're doing your shooting on. Because you had to coax it up and thing like that. You got a certain pressure on what they call a fuse spring and thing like that, and then the water and thing like that.
But it was water cooled, was it?
Water cooled.
So how did you get water to it? Did you carry a supply of water?
There's so much water put in the container, because it's like a round bottle, you know. Well, I mean, it's only a 303 bottle, really, and the rest is for water. Well, the water's just poured in, the cap on. Then you have like a hose pipe leading into a can of water. But very, that wasn't required much. That was really mostly for a continuous shooting. You know, like when you were maybe shooting 4 or 5 hours and things like that. But it was water cool. You had to get so much water and then so much pressure on what they call the fuse, the spring, you know, what brought the lug back and forwards, about 3.5 pounds and things like that. Used to have like a scale, and it used to, you could tell the weight of it, you know, see, that the balance it. But all that was taught you before, long way before you ever fired. Oh, yes. I tell you, you were there 12 months before you fired. And then your next 12 months, you're still almost all the time before you classed as a machine gunner. 2 years, not one, two.
And what was your role in the battalion as a machine gun company?
It was termed as a support company. If the maneuvers come, you might be sent to the A company. One section might be sent to the A company, or two, whatever is required, or B company, or brigade, or different areas, if the maneuvers are required. You want it like all together. No, you were sent else, allocated to different ones when it comes to maneuvers. That's why you were termed the support company. For all I done, going guns themselves, loose guns, but they give a machine gun that was required. Oh, it was interesting. It was mine. It was interesting to me, though.
And whilst all this was going on, you were still doing the normal routine duties of infantryman.
Oh, yes, normal duties. You had to even pass your test for your rifles and things like that, your lessons. Well, I think there's about even with a rifle, there's about 37 lessons with a rifle alone. I mean, they couldn't have been 10 during the war, but there was different lessons, about 37, even just with a normal rifle. Because the NCOs had books, you know, for different lessons to go through.
Were there any other weapons that you were involved with at all during your during your time with the battalion?
Well, there's a machine gun there. You get what they call a revolver shot, because the machine gun, the number one Kaiser revolver. That's a 4.5, Wembley 4.5. And you all do a bit revolver shooting, but not a great deal of revolver shooting, no.
And did you carry the revolvers with you when you were moving around?
Just the one. Just the only number one had a revolver. No, definitely only number one. And he never had any live ammunition kind of around. Oh, no live ammunition. Never. The only live ammunition you ever got was when you're on the range. Never any live ammunition any time.
At this stage in the 1930s, was the training geared to the First World War experience?
Well, I couldn't really answer that truthfully, but we had chaps who were in the First World War, occasional sergeant, even though company commander, machine gunner, Charlie Beer. I said that was the name of company commander, Charlie Beer. He was a machine gun officer in the First World War. No, there was, mind the drilling, the routine was more or less the same. Oh, yes. But I'd say, like anything else, different things come up and they advanced. And you had to keep up with it.
Was the trench digging as part of the training, setting up positions of that kind?
Yes, you were taught different positions as regard that. But you've done very little, that surprised me, you've done very little training regard that field training. You were taught how to do it, and then that was the finish. But when it comes to during the war, you use your own initiative a lot, and we would come in handy, mind, the basic training coming handy, could have come back to you. But, I mean, you thought, even when it was during the war, well, I mean, you want to take a position and things like that, and such a thing to avoid ambushes, somebody on your left, somebody on your right, scouts, and things like that.
And had you been taught that, as you say, as a basic kind of
thing? Oh, you're taught that as a basic, but not too often. Well, during the war, you ensure them things, you remember that'd be done for your own safety. Such a thing, well, when you're firing, count the number of rounds. You know what I mean? You say, well, count the number of rounds. You know how many you're firing, how many you got left. Things like that. Instead of saying, oh, my gun stopped, I got no ammunition. See? You know how much you left and how much you used. Little things like that.
Did you have any anti-gas precaution training?
Yes, you had your normal gas mask. Then you'd go in a gas chamber and things like that and put your gas mask on. But you even fired your course with your gas mask on.
That included machine gun firing?
Yes, rifle and rifle fire. You done a series of training with a gas mask on. It was always a nuisance because it was always on your chest, you know, see. But still, they never went to use it, thank goodness, but yeah, you're fully trained as a guard that. You even learned how to fire it on, so.
How often did manoeuvres come around and exercises?
Well, it would start off really company training. The company would start training as a company. And then you start training as a battalion. The battalion would do it. And then you do brigade training in brigade. It would be four regiments in brigade. And then we'll go on to divisional training and things like that. You know, it was all built up from one to the. You started off really basic amongst yourselves. Your platoon training, platoon this one, you know, your platoon doing what they're doing. Then your company, then your battalion, then your brigade, training. It went all the years through. It all had a certain period. Certain period laid down for company training, certain period laid down for battalion training, certain period laid down for then regard the manoeuvre part of it.
And your specialist training was machine guns?
Always machine guns.
Other men would have other specialist training?
Other ones was the all gunners were on machine guns. The A, B, C companies, they would do their training with a rifle and the Lewis gun.
Did you, at any time, whilst you were doing your training in the battalion, did you ever get the opportunity to exercise with other arms of the service, for example, artillery or tanks? Or?
No, we didn't. Like, early on, no. When they were saying there was... when you come on the brigade and that, that there was tanks and they got, but, you know, we never come in contact with them.
You never worked with tanks?
No, we didn't work, we didn't. No, I've never seen any tanks. The only, they tell we got recognized in 1934. We had them Cardinal Lloyds, that photograph where I showed you. We start, them's the only track vehicles we used. The artillery would, they would be the same, not the track vehicles, but we never, we were training with them, but we never seen them, you know what I mean? When they made these maneuvers, they would have to send artillery over here, so-and-so over here, and then the chaps turned as umpires. See? They had a full scale of what was going on. But we never saw them. Got through and all mixed with them. Oh, we were glad when it come off that was the old bugle blown. No parades today. You know, when I blew, that was the... The bugle was always there for the different signals what they wanted.
Looking back, or bearing in mind what you had to face within a few years in wartime, uh-huh. Was the training that you were getting in the 30s with the battalion, was it relevant? Did you find that it really did help you a great deal?
It boosted you. It was really come back to you. As I say, you've done the things over and over and over again. Well, I mean, then you get... slack periods, which is peacetime and things like that. And then when they come to war, you know, things were really boring because you've done a lot of bayonet fighting, quite a lot of bayonet training. As a matter of fact, bayonet training took the form of the more or less PT exercise. You know, you used to do an hour, did when you were before exercises, you still do your exercise, but you used to get an hour's bayonet training nearly every month.
So there's a great deal of emphasis on bayonet training.
Always. And believe me, it's coming handy. Yes, it's coming handy through one of my experiences later on, which I know.
Was life at Kattrick a great difference from life in the depot? Was the discipline stronger or the same or what?
All the discipline was stronger. As I say, you had to respect. You're walking down. If you just to walk your dining room then, but your hair was combed and things like that, and you never slouched down. If you did, the sergeant major, anybody saw you, he just let blow at you, and then he'd look at your boots, look you up, and then. He ended up in charge with dirty boots, dirty cab badge, or something like that. So, you know, you kept yourself clean as you could, and when you walked down, you walked your dining room then, because you didn't get paid to go to the dining room. You used to walk your dining room for your meals. And if you're slouching down, and even now the same would bowl old shot at you, which was a good one, a chap called Marx. He was a real good fella. RSM Marks. I respect that fellow. Mine, he had a voice like a foghorn, but he was good.
And what memories have you of him?
Well, in the battalion, he used to have parades of his own, really, because you'd have your company parades, then the RSM parades, then the CO's parade. Well, the adjutant parade before the CO parade. And the CO's parade with the colonel of the lot, you know, the number one parade. And the RSM parade was always the worst. Not only for us, but for the sergeant as well. Because, you know, you used to do fixed bayonets and things like that, and then different formations were a company. And the sergeant had their part to play as well. It was, and the colour sergeant, that's the chap who wear three stripes and the crown above it. He's the chap in charge of your pay, really, what they call the colour sergeant. They had to play their part, and the sergeant majors, they had to drill as well. On the RSM parade, believe me, it was tough for us, but it was tougher for them. And then he used to take the young officers, the RSM, in what they call sword drill. And then when they come on to the CO's parade, they had to play their part as well. Well, you will drill that, but the RSM, he was the backbone of the regiment. And he got discipline, and he... You might have some chaps walking to the dining room, you know, just here they go and just smoke a cigarette. And then all of a sudden, being crossing the squares and they got, and these lead blaze at you, and you had eye like a hawk. And you'd end up